Donald Trump's defensive cries of no collusion on Twitter earlier this week may be premature. The insistent plea came after his former campaign chair, Paul Manafort, and an aide named Rick Gates turned themselves in to the FBI after they were indicted on numerous charges by Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller. The president was also quick to distance himself from George Papadopoulos, who was a lead campaign foreign policy adviser and had been indicted earlier this year. It was revealed on Monday that Papadopoulos had turned himself into authorities in late July, accepted a plea deal, and was cooperating with authorities. Trump tweeted, "Few people knew the young, low-level volunteer named George, who has already proven to be a liar." Well, what are the repercussions, direct and indirect, of these indictments? Joining me to help answer that question is Larry Benske, longtime award-winning print and broadcast journalist. He teaches political science at the California State University East Bay and is currently teaching a course on the American presidency. He's written for The Nation magazine and was a regular contributor to the Los Angeles Times Sunday Book Review. Welcome to the program, Larry.
Great to be back, Sonali, and hello once again to longtime listeners.
So let's first talk about specifically what the no collusion angle that Trump is trying to push means. Essentially, he's saying that because the indictments against Manafort and Gates involved dealings with the Ukrainian leader Viktor Yanukovych, all of which happened before Manafort joined the campaign, that none of what happened, none of these indictments, current indictments against Manafort and Gates, have anything to do with Trump, right? That's what Trump is trying to say.
That doesn't make any sense. And I think that the evidence, if it ever comes to a trial, is going to contain evidence of numerous occasions when all of the people that have been named so far and indicted and many others will be seen to have spoken to each other. Now, we have to be very careful here because the difference between colluding and conspiring is a difference between doing something that a lot of people do every day and something that's illegal. It's illegal to conspire to violate laws. It is not illegal to get together and collude on how you might win a political campaign. Robert Mueller knows this very, very carefully, I'm sure, and his team of investigators knows this. But it defies belief that a man like Papadopoulos, and let's talk about him in a moment, a man like Papadopoulos would have access and interface with so many people involved in the Trump campaign, and especially with Manafort and all the people around Manafort, and that they would not at some point have discussed and in fact colluded about the various elements in the campaign that they thought might help them win. But between colluding, as I said, and conspiring, you have a great big gap, and there's a law in the middle of that gap, and it's that law that the prosecutor has to take in mind whenever he decides what he's going to charge anybody with.
So Manafort himself is an unsavory character. Even last year, it was revealed that this is a man who helps paper over the terrible images of foreign leaders. He has a long, long history that has been documented. He's worked with numerous unsavory foreign leaders, not just Viktor Yanukovych, but Ferdinand Marcos. So he worked with all of these other leaders, and now he came, in 2016, came into the Trump campaign. That in and of itself should be something that, no matter how Trump tries to distance himself from Manafort, we should question. Why did Trump choose to work with somebody, bring on as his campaign chair somebody like Manafort?
Because he was a friend of his. Yeah. And Manafort has a long history in the Republican Party of being a guy who gets things done. He managed numerous Republican conventions. He helped produce and supervise things like Ronald Reagan's Morning in America famous video. He, in addition, and we'll get to that in a minute, to all his personal activities with the tyrants and dictators of the world, he was very familiar with and on a first-name basis with all the movers and shakers in the Republican Party, including people like James Baker and John McCain. So he's one of the guys. And when it seemed like Trump didn't have anybody around him who was, as they say, a grown-up all of these so-called movement people and members of his family had pretty much zero experience in running a political campaign, especially for something like the presidency. He reached out to a guy he rode the elevator with because Manafort has an apartment in Trump Tower in New York, and they see each other all the time. In addition, they share a lot of friends and associates all around the world. Now, we should not gloss over, and I'm really shocked, I shouldn't be, but I'm shocked, if not surprised, at the coverage of the first day after the indictment, which includes so little about Manafort and his career. You alluded to, in the New York Times today makes reference to, he had associations with unsavory dictators and tyrants. These are not just unsavory dictators and tyrants. These are people like Mobutu Sese Seko, who the dictator and tyrant in the Congo, who is responsible for millions of deaths. These are people like Marcos, whom you mentioned, in the Philippines. There are also people like Jonas Savimbi of UNITA in Africa, who was himself responsible for an enormous amount of suffering and loss of life. And the list goes on and on. There are others as well, Sani Abacha. So, you know, this is a man whose life's work, if you will, was in large part doing public relations for people who were arguably inhuman criminals. And if there had been an effective world court, these people would have been tried and sentenced to long terms, if not to loss of life. These are the types of clients he went after. And he would get people like, for example, Jean Kirkpatrick at the United Nations to stand up and give glowing recommendations of character to people who had nothing to recommend them except they were on the United States side, so-called, in the Cold War against the Soviet Union and Russia. That's all you had to be to pass muster. It didn't matter what you did to your own people. It didn't matter how much you enriched yourself. It didn't matter the practices of the armed forces and the police in your regime. All that mattered was that you were on so-called our side. And our side turned out to be, as history has shown, the wrong side over and over again.
And it's the money that Viktor Yanukovych paid to Manafort for his services that that Manafort has been now accused of laundering and avoiding paying taxes on in order to furnish his house and send his kids to fancy private schools, etc. And this was the meat of the current set of indictments that he has pled, he and Gates have pled not guilty to. Do you think that more indictments will be forthcoming? Because, of course, it was Manafort's presence in the June 2016 meeting in Trump Tower, where several others, including Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner, were present. Are the current indictments a lead up to indictments around that meeting, which, if that were to happen, would be a much, much bigger issue?
That would be a conspiracy type indictment, and that would be very troublesome to Donald Trump and his administration. But you mentioned in passing something which I think we should not neglect. Mueller's investigation is being done not only by FBI agents, but by agents from the Treasury Department and the IRS. When this kind of money is gotten in an underhand manner, not reported, sheltered offshore in places like Cyprus, that automatically triggers the interest of people in the United States government and indeed in world government as to people avoiding all kinds of laws and regulations about taxes, about how money is supposed to be moved. If I sent you, and I wish I'd been in a position to do so, it would ever be $10,001 tomorrow, your bank would have to report that immediately to the Treasury Department as a suspect transaction, anything over $10,000. These people were sending much more than $10,000. A lot of it was being transported in cash. And by the way, I think that there's almost certainly an arm of this investigation that's looking into how that cash is transported. You know, we have the biggest note that you can print in the United States is $100. Think about $5 million and how many bills that takes. How do you transport that? How do you get it from one place to another? Who conspires with you, conspires, not colludes, but conspires with you for this illegal transportation of money? Now, what has any of this got to do with the politics of the Trump administration? Well, a lot of the people in the Trump administration, as we know, are not people who have any intention of, or even would know how to, so-called drain the swamp. They are the people who flood the swamp with filth and muck, and in the case of these tyrants and dictators, blood. These are the swamp makers. Anybody who's on that level, and there are many people in the Trump cabinet who are on that level, multi-billionaires, has had to keep their hands clean as far as how they transport money, how they report money, how they pay taxes, et cetera, et cetera. And many of them employ very skilled professionals to help them do so. It appears from this indictment yesterday that Manafort was not one of the people who bothered to have the type of people around him who would tell him, no, you can't do that. You have to do it this way. And we can get you off the tax liability, but you can't just not report it. You can't just do business with a foreign government and not register as a foreign agent. That's a crime. That's a violation of a law. So if you don't listen to your lawyers, some people think that they're so cynical and the lawyers are not there to advise them. They're there to get them out of trouble after they get indicted and get them the best deal possible. Well, Manafort is going to have some kind of skilled attorneys in order to get him off the kinds of charges he's charged with. As to the answer to your question, I have no idea how many more, if any, indictments will be coming down. I know that the investigation is continuing. I know that, for example, when Papadopoulos is now on the government side, and this is something that I think should not be overlooked, Sonali, he was arrested at an airport, Washington Airport, in July. Nobody knew till yesterday that he had been arrested. It had not come out. There'd been no leaks from Mueller's office. If this had been Kenneth Starr and the Clinton investigation, he would have had a press conference the next morning. Show a picture of Papadopoulos. Mueller is keeping strict secrecy about this. He's behaving as a prosecutor legally should. And now he's got this guy who's probably been singing like a canary since July about everybody he saw so that he would be booked on only one small charge, not telling the truth to a federal agent. And therefore, he would incur a sentence of maybe 5 years, but he's not going to get that much time. Probably a judge will consider his cooperation. He's being called a proactive cooperator. This could mean anything up until the fact that he may have been wearing a wire since July. In every meeting he's had with everybody in the Trump foreign policy advising establishment, in that meeting you talked about in Trump Towers, in any other place, he may have been wearing a wire, and every single thing that's been said in the room may have been transmitted back to Mueller's investigators. This has all the people who he had contact with since then frantically searching their phone logs, frantically searching their personal schedules and diaries, saying, I had a drink with that guy. What the hell did we talk about? What if every single thing that was in that room is not the property of the federal investigators?
So, Larry, Papadopoulos was basically, is now revealed to have tried to get dirt on Clinton from the Russian government for the Trump campaign. And of course, the Trump camp, Trump people and Trump himself are trying to say, well, what about the dossier on Trump that the Democrats were trying to get from Russia? And it's very possible, right, that Russia was playing both sides, that Russian officials were offering dirt on the other side to both candidates last year.
Possibly. But it was seen for a long time to be in Putin's interest to have Donald Trump elected. And there's one major difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump writing. One is president of the United States and the other one isn't.
Right.
Investigating what she and her campaign may or may not have done a year or two ago doesn't have anything but the mark of desperation and desperation rhetoric. And it's the kind of things that they throw out on Fox News. It has absolutely nothing to do with what Mueller is into. But you have to realize that these investigations can get out of hand. They can lead where nobody expects them to lead. You know how long that Whitewater inquiry into the Clintons went? 7 years. 7 years. They turned one witness right at the beginning about the land deal, and they used that to escalate up into every damn thing until they finally got to Monica Lewinsky, which had absolutely nothing to do with the original charge. But once these things get started, there's no telling where they're going to go. Will Manafort turn is the question. Will Manafort now admit to what he did, plead guilty to some charges, and then will he start answering questions about Trump and the Trump family? But when you met him in the elevator and you started talking about Russia, what did you say? Did Julian Assange communicate with you? How did WikiLeaks get all of that material? What was your interface with James Comey? And most intriguing of all to me, don't forget one of the major advisors to Trump during that campaign was a guy named Jeff Sessions. Sessions apparently realized Papadopoulos was bad news, but Sessions was present at a lot of other meetings as well. If Sessions in one of those meetings got into, as he may well have gotten into, and as he's said already that he's made misstatements about in the past, got into things with the Soviet Union, excuse me, with Russia, and he says that, I was doing that in my capacity as a senator, how many of those actually took place? What did he say about those? You have a possibility here, intriguing, of course, to those at the upper levels of the legal profession in Washington, possibility the Attorney General of the United States is going to be under investigation by an independent counsel.
Now, do you think that the issue of where this particular investigation leads is going to derail the GOP's legislative agenda, right? Because while all of this is happening, they are desperate for one win. They've lost on the healthcare reform, although they're, of course, still destroying Obamacare piece by piece any way they can, but they couldn't do it legislatively. They've moved on as fast as possible to tax reform, and Trump very clearly said on his Twitter feed that we should be focusing on the tax reform. And isn't it coincidental that these indictments came right as we were getting ready to pass this? What will the indirect repercussions politically be of these indictments?
Well, that's a key question, Sonali. We're just about a year from congressional election. And the idea that Republicans will want to run for office if this continues to build, if these unsavory, if not illegal, actions continue to build and there are more indictments, how many Republicans are going to run for office as supporters of Donald Trump? And is the Republican Party as such going to come to Trump's relief? People always, when they talk about impeachment, and that, of course, comes out on the table again now, they always go back to Richard Nixon. And Richard Nixon, you have to remember, impeachment of him was a political process. It's not a legal process. And the political process is dependent on politicians, elected politicians in the House of Representatives and the Senate. It used to be, I'm going to hold it up here, that when we had non-instant journalism and you had to publish a book in order to get the public's attention to details, this was one that was published right after Nixon resigned from office.
It's called say the title for our radio audience?
The End of a Presidency. And it's 400 pages of day-by-day TikTok, as they say, of what went on day-by-day that eventually tightened the noose around Nixon. Well, if you look in the newspapers today, they've started the TikTok already on what's happening around Donald Trump. So the Republicans are going to have to decide, do they want to, as you say, see their agenda derailed day after day after day? You know, how much time do you think anybody in Washington in a position of power or even close to power or who meditates upon power or who tries to lobby and manipulate power, how much time do you think they're spending today on tax cuts?
Right.
Pretty close to zero. And it's not going to come back up if day by day there's another trickle of little information. In their favor is the fact that Mueller's gang doesn't leak. But on the other hand, Trump's can't stop blabbing. And so every time he comes out with something, it's going to have to be held up to some standard of proof. He's already proved to the media, by and large, except for places like Fox News and Rush Limbaugh, that he can't be trusted. And they don't even care to trust him. They say it doesn't matter what the facts are. It's what you believe in and where you think we're going. Any thought that on anything, Iran or global warming or the tax situation, that Trump is in control of an agenda right now is ludicrous. It could be that there will be no further developments for weeks and months, but these indictments today, if they are not dismissed or isn't a plea bargaining, there's going to be a trial. And that trial is going to begin as soon as 9 months from now, and maybe a little later than that. But even if it's a build-up to a trial and more witnesses are being interviewed before grand juries and their lawyers decide to make that public, you're going to have a constant drumbeat of political effect of this as we lead up to next year's congressional elections. So all of that has to be considered.
Larry, you are a veteran journalist. You have covered many presidencies. What do you say to those who say this is just political intrigue? The progressive media shouldn't waste its time covering this because this whole issue of claiming collusion or conspiracy with Russia feeds into Red Scare type, McCarthy era type, fear mongering that just fuels the Cold War. We should be focused on much more constructive things.
Well, we should be focused on much more constructive things, but you can be focused on several things at once. Those who liken this to anything like the Cold War, I have to remember that the Cold War, first of all, wasn't cold, and second of all, it involved on the other side one of the most vicious, bloody dictators that the world has ever known, Stalin. It's not as if there was an ideal state over there that was presided over by a benevolent dictator. Stalin wasn't a benevolent dictator. He was a vicious butcher. And in a sense, those who were against him by any means necessary have been proven to be right over the years. They weren't right in their methods. They had ancillary collateral damage in many cases. They damaged the cause of free speech. They damaged the cause of free association in the United States. But on the other hand, Putin is another guy who, although he doesn't have as much blood on his hands yet, has plenty in the Ukraine, and the machinations that went on there with Manafort's collusion and support were all part of what Putin and the people behind him see as another push by the West, by the NATO countries, led by the United States, to circumscribe and at very least probe the defenses of Russia. And you have to understand that in their minds, having lost more people in the Second World War than all other countries combined, they don't want to be in a position where that can even remotely be possible again. So the idea that bringing Putin and the Russians into this is some sort of McCarthyism, I think it's ludicrous.
Larry, I want to thank you as always for joining us today. I have a feeling we'll be bringing you back more frequently as these as this investigation heats up. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, and thank you once again for all the good work you do, Sonali.
Thank you. Larry Bensky is a longtime award-winning print and broadcast journalist. He teaches political science at Cal State University East Bay. He's currently teaching a course on the American presidency.